is shortwave station HAT4, Budapest, Hungary calling. We shall now give you our news bulletin. Notwithstanding the happy return of Subcalpathia, the colossal achievement of the Hungarian army, and the delirious joy of the local population, certain foreign papers have been spreading baseless and unfounded reports within the last few days. It will therefore be useful if we throw a glance backwards on the fate of Subcarpathia, her situation during the last 20 years, and the struggles of her population. First of all, we must remind our listeners that at the time of the Treaty of Trianon, Masaryk and Benes himself considered Subcarpathia as a most unwelcome gift. The Russian population of Subcarpathia is neither Slovak nor Ukrainian. This people, exactly as the Poles, have always tended towards the West. Its faith is predominantly Greek Catholic, which separates it from the other Slavs living in the neighborhood. Owing to the geographical and economic conditions, only relations with Hungary can assure its livelihood. In the near future, much will have to be done for the cultural life of the Carpatho Russians. Their literary language is now in process of formation. From the Slav side, many efforts have been made to oblige them to accept as their language the Ukrainian. Who are these Ukrainians, and how did they get to Subcarpathia, when, as we have already said, the local population is Carpatho Russian and not Ukrainian? It will be recalled that one of the main props of the anti-Polish policy of Benes was the fostering of the Irredenta movement among the Ukrainians in Poland herself. All those Ukrainians who got into trouble there were settled in Subcarpathian Russia and supported by Czech money. All these immigrants were given good positions by the Czechs. From the very beginning, the local Carpatho-Russian middle classes regarded them with disfavor as intruders, for they occupied their places. The second phase of the Ukrainian invasion began in autumn 1938. Then the Czechs, and later the Ukrainian government of Voloshin, in pursuance of the anti-Hungarian policy, had intensified this immigration of Ukrainians and had organized from among them the so-called Sich Guards. These Sich Guards eventually got so strong and by February so lawless that even the Czech troops themselves had to turn against them. This led to many bloody clashes. In these struggles, the population remained neutral, except for cases of personal vengeance, for their more or less cultured Czech oppressor was now fighting against one much more wild and terrible. These struggles going on in the whole of the land, but more particularly in proximity to the frontier, created the situation which caused the local population to appeal to the Hungarian government to rid them of both foreign oppressors. All the more so as in the end, it was always the population that suffered most from these struggles. When the Hungarian government decided to occupy Subcarpathia, hardly any resistance was met with from the Czech troops, only a few shots being exchanged with them. On the other hand, the Sich Guards put up a desperate resistance, and for reasons that are quite evident. They could not escape towards Poland, for they were compromised there and were afraid of the Polish authorities. On the other hand, the Slovaks would not let them enter their territory. So only those bands which were in the east could escape towards Romania. The advancing Hungarian troops, notwithstanding the severe snowstorm, easily put an end to the resistance of the Sich Guards, who were dispersed. The dispersed Sich Guards were then hunted down and killed by the local population, so that only those escaped with their lives who had surrendered to the Hungarians. The occupation of Subcarpathia was finished in 3 days, notwithstanding the fact that as the whole thing came on so unexpectedly, the Hungarian frontier troops were on a peace footing and had just been complemented with new conscripts of only 6 weeks standing. As things turned out, however, these troops proved perfectly adequate. During the occupation, it was necessary to bring up these divisions to their full strength, and that is why a few thousand men have been called up. The joy and happiness of the Carpathian Russian population on the appearance of the Hungarian troops was indescribable. Contrary to all false reports, the population considers the Hungarians as their liberators. The relations between the Carpathian Russian and the Hungarians have been warm and friendly for the centuries, as everybody knows. During the minor fighting which took place during the occupation, the local population was of the greatest help to the advancing Hungarian troops. Insofar as the behavior of the now escaped Voloshin government is concerned, it will be recalled that Colonel Voloshin is personally a very ambitious but naively simple Greek Catholic priest who pursued his Ukrainian policy to the great dissatisfaction and distress of the rest of the clergy. His policy is best characterized by the following few events. Within 4 days, he applied to Germany to take Subcarpathia under her protection. This proposal being ignored, he then sent two of his confidential friends to Budapest to open negotiations here. These people, however, never arrived. Voloshin, in the meantime, escaped to Romania and offered them Subcarpathia, or rather asked the Romanian government to occupy it. He did this at a time when the Hungarian outposts had already reached the Polish frontier. After all this, Voloshin wrote a letter to Professor Illich of the University of Budapest, and a complete Russian by birth, asking him to intercede with the Hungarian government. His principal request was that the Hus government should be left in power. The Romanians not only did not comply with Voloshin's request, but quite on the contrary, asked him to leave their territory, whereupon he went to Yugoslavia. This well-informed politician of wide view is now reported to be journeying to England, where he hopes, by means of propaganda, to change the events which are already accomplished fact. Colonel Voloshin has become a comic figure on the stage of present-day European history. Insofar as the economic future of Subcarpathia is concerned, it can be assured only by Hungary. The Carpathian Russians will now be able to take up again their age-old work, that of sending timber to Hungary and of working during the harvest in the Hungarian plain. From a political point of view, during 20 years of Czech domination, there was no question of Subcarpathian autonomy. The so-called Carpathian Russian government was formed only last autumn. But a few days later, the Czechs cast the premier, Monsieur Andrew Brody, into prison. The Voloshin government, later formed, consisted, in fact, of two persons only. Colonel Voloshin himself and a certain Levi government, later formed, consisted, in fact, of two persons only. Colonel Voloshin himself and a certain Levi, who was a renegade of Hungarian origin, a former communist and an ordinary criminal. The autonomy which Hungary will give Subcarpathia will certainly be wider than that given by the Czechs. The county autonomy of Hungary is very wide indeed, and there is hardly another country in Europe, except perhaps Switzerland, where local self-administration is as widely developed as it is in Hungary. Naturally, Subcarpathia will receive even a wider autonomy than that provided for in the existing Hungarian laws. You have just heard our new service in English, broadcast from shortwave station HD4 Budapest, Hungary.